This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
They're dropping the gloves right off the bat. Gilbert and Matthew Olivier. And now they start to trade and down they go. Sabres come back with Byram in the offensive zone. Zucker with a shot block. Rebound scores! Byram! Gilbert keeps it in up the line. Gilbert again holds it. Slap scores! Tuck with the deflection, and he points to Gilbert, who fired that one perfectly, and the Sabres lead it 2-1. Zucker brings it out of the corner, works it up top, Flores shuts, scores! It's Alex Tuck, first down the line, it's 3-1 Buffalo. Sabres clear it, say goodnight, 3-2, Sabres win it, they go 4 in a row.
Welcome into Sabres Live. Sabres off until Saturday now and trying to extend then their winning streak to 5 games. Obviously, an awful lot of good offensively on the homestand as they outscore their opponents 18-10, Marty Biron. But I feel like I'm going to ask you to readjust your sights today based on the fact that even with all these wins, everybody in the Eastern Conference is basically doing the same thing in wild card 1-2 and not so far behind that.
Yeah, I mean, Boston wins, Tampa wins, Detroit wins, the Islanders win, the Montreal Canadiens win. Pittsburgh got a point. That's Philly got a point. It's everybody's getting things, and that's normal, but you got to win your games and you got to respond. Look, I felt like there was a nervous energy around the Sabres yesterday, obviously, with what happened the game prior with New Jersey, with Tage Thompson. The game started with Dennis Gilbert getting into a fight. Did that really change the tone of the game? Did that make up for what happened against New Jersey? No. But for Gibby, got to give him credit, right? He's like, what can I do? Me, myself, and I, what can I do? And he went out there against one of the toughest guys in the league. So give him credit. But the shots were 1-0 Columbus after 5 minutes. It's not like that lit up a fire under both teams and boom, we went. There we go, right? And it took it some time. But the Sabres, I felt like, played a very good game against a team that is decimated with injuries right now, the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Thompson was out, Luukkonen was out, Samuelson out among those who didn't play for Buffalo last night. All are reportedly watching from the bench area at Sabres practice today. And they lost Beck Malenstein in game last night. And Dylan Cousins, along with Malenstein, absent from practice. So these are...
Luukkonen's a bit of a surprise. Luukkonen, like, look, yesterday... We all expected Luukkonen to play, right? He was on the ice at morning skate. Now, Lindy said he came off just as the morning skate was about to end, maybe a few minutes early, but you're a starting goalie. That happens all the time. Like, well, practice is over. I'm good. I got my stuff. I got my work. So that was a bit of a surprise. And now maybe it's just giving him an extra day. We'll see tomorrow at practice what that looks like. But Reimer came in, did a great job, but this is a little puzzling, that Luukkonen has something that's nagging right now that he couldn't go last night.
Yeah, my point before you interrupted was that Cousins...
I like to interrupt.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Cousins and Malenstein being absent from practice. Obviously, Beck, we suspected because he played a couple of shifts in the second period and no more. Cousins not being out there is interesting. And look, they ended with 10 forwards last night. And obviously the most recent call-up in Isaac Rosén kind of took the brunt of that because he only had three shifts in the third period. And it's probably the easiest thing for a coach to do when you start with 11 and you get down to 10, you're automatically going to go to 9 because it just makes more sense. Let's run through this period, keep three lines in rotation and not really worry much else about it. But what we had seen prior to that was Rosén starting the game, playing a healthy more than 5 minutes in the first period with Jiří and with JJ. But then to weave this all back to, you know, Cousins and whatever is happening, with his absence, i.e., did he not play much last night because he wasn't 100%? The fact of the matter is, with the diminished number of forwards, we saw in-game the adjustment to put Quinn in place of Rosén on a line with Kulik and Peterka, but we also saw Krebs playing between Zucker and Tuck. In fact, they were out there for Tuck's second goal. Which, you know, so you were there. This often happens in an 11-7 configuration. You get some significant differences in time on ice for players, like Ryan McLeod ended up with big minutes last night, right? But as we were sitting there doing the post game last night, you were kind of thinking a lot about Cousins' ice time and that. So, fact he's not out there right now, you know, we'll obviously await an update on his current situation.
Well, my big question mark was, okay, Beck Malenstein played the least amount of any forwards because he got hurt. And then Isaac Rosén got lost in the shuffle. There was 10 forwards, as you just explained. You're probably rolling 9 more, and so that's him. But then after that, the lowest amount of ice time by a forward was Dylan Cousins. And when you think, hey, we're down to 9 forwards, you would think we're going to see a lot of Dylan Cousins, especially because there's no Tage Thompson. You know, there's injuries. You would think that Dylan would have been there. So my first thought was, is this because they didn't like his game? Which I went back and looked at some of the shifts, and I'm like, hey, it wasn't bad. It was okay, you know, so, or is there something that is bugging him? Was it a straight, maintenance day, just give him the rest or so we'll have to wait to hear what Lindy Ruff says about it. But that was my concern last night and moving forward, that is a concern again, because we all know now we're pretty thin. The Sabres are at center. And if Cousins doesn't go, well, that thins it out even more.
Right. He had a normal volume, though, of shifts in the third, even if he wasn't in his customary spot. He had 7 shifts in the period, which was more than he had in the second. And he was out there to start shifts with 7 minutes left, with 5 minutes left, and with 3 minutes left. So it wasn't like he was sitting there not playing. So that's why this is more pronounced, the fact that he's not out there now on the heels of everybody we talked about who was not in the mix yesterday. So and yet it's still, as would just about every team right now, pales in comparison to the absences of what poor Columbus was dealing with last night. Like Aaron Portsline, the longtime writer, I mean, the lead was unrecognizable. And it's true. Like, unrecognizable. Their bottom six, their bottom 3 to 4 on the blue line. Like, it just... And yet, I could still see semblances of how Dean Evason has managed to get help guide them to where, like, there was some stuff in their makeup, outlets, regroups, efficiency with moving the puck that I was like, wow, like this is not easy to accomplish when you have such a scattered lineup. But at the end of the day, I thought Buffalo played incredibly smart. and maybe efficient is a word you could use also, and they had really solid net mining from James Reimer. So these are the coin flip games. You used the phrase moments ago, like they played okay, whether it was, you know, Cousins or whatever. That's kind of how I would describe the game last night. It was like, okay. Yep. Like it was, it's just, it was what it was. It's one of 82, right? I don't know what
Reimer was really good. That's the better than okay. That wins your game.
Exactly.
Tuck was really good. Playing over 22 minutes. That maybe is a part of the game that wins your game. So that's what it comes down to. Look, Columbus, we saw Fantilli. He's flying. I love him. We saw Kent Johnson. He was great. Del Bell Blues. I saw him quite a bit. Those are the players, but they're young. They're young players. You're missing a lot of that support staff, which, you know, is going to hurt Columbus. It's going to hurt Columbus now in their chance of trying to make the playoffs. So we'll see. They're going to get a 2-week break, and maybe Werenski comes back. He's a big factor on the blue line. Marchenko is going to be a little longer. Maybe Boone Jenner comes back. Maybe Monahan comes back. So we'll see with that. Quickly on Dylan Cousins, though, Duffer, because we talk about he didn't play a whole lot last night, considering that they were down to 9 forwards or 10 forwards. But, you know, Roseanne only had 3 shifts in the third. And there's still a lot of speculation around the NHL about the Sabres and Dylan Cousins. Teams are calling on Dylan Cousins, right? Pierre LeBrun and 2/3 of the league have checked in Buffalo on Dylan Cousins. Kevin Weeks.
What's the other third doing?
They've checked in like earlier in the year, so they haven't checked in recently. Exactly. Kevin Weeks, our buddy Weeksy, on Instagram put a picture of Chippewa Street and a couple of big eyes emoji. Right? Like, basically, keep an eye on the Sabres. Keep an eye on, he loves doing that stuff. But Weeksy's pretty connected. So I'm like, okay, is this something that will lead somewhere before March 7th, the trade deadline? Or are we just kind of like spinning yarns and it's not going to go anywhere?
Mm-hmm. Well, the break is going to, it's crazy. We've just mentioned the immediate teams that we witnessed last night and what their injury situations are. But it is so widespread across the league, and it is affected, compounded, whatever, by this Four Nations tournament. Either, oh my gosh, we have a player that's bordering on day-to-day right now, or worse, who is scheduled to play in this tournament. Or these four countries are expecting a Werenski, boom, 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 down the list you go, and Quinn Hughes, like Quinn Hughes' situation is, like, think of the U.S. defense here. Like, I get it. It's unbelievable. But I don't want to be losing Werenski and Hughes. Like, it's pretty crazy. So there's just, I feel like we're under this gigantic question mark right now as to how teams are going to get through the remaining games of this week, and then who's going to benefit from their injured guys being off for almost 2 weeks, or who is literally going to be sitting there holding their breath, which would have happened anyway for me if I was a general manager going into this season, knowing that I'm having to watch our players go play for somebody else in the middle of the season.
It's not 7 or 8 games, but it's still playing.
It's a tense time. And I feel that across the league right now, no matter what storyline, like even Crosby got dinged up last night in game, came back, was in the shootout, got stopped by Nico Daws in the shootout. Spectacular shootout, by the way.
Yep.
7 rounds, people on their feet in Pittsburgh. Like, the Penguins aren't in a good place. The crowd was into it. There was a game-saving moment. Dougie Hamilton had to score to extend it for New Jersey. Did back and forth they went.
Timo Meier with the winner.
Yeah, it was really high drama, really good, and yet now Crosby, upper body absent from practice today. What does that tie in with everything I just talked about?
Linus Ullmark came back last night.
He's the captain of Team Cat. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this is a lot.
Linus Ullmark came back last night. It's first game back. Like, is he going to play for Sweden at the Four Nations? Or is he going to say, you know what? I'm going to take the 2 weeks of rest.
What about Lukanen?
Because we don't know.
Lukanen and Saros.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
And Lankinen. Like.
Well, now I'm like, looking at Lukanen and saying, like, yeah, this affects the Sabres because, okay, they won four in a row. They won four in a row. They got Nashville, who is you just beat, and Nashville is not going in the right direction right now. You have a chance to go to five in a row before the break and want to keep it going after the break. Now, I'm not concerned about Rasmus Dahlin. Dahlin's going to go to the Four Nations faceoff. I anticipate he's healthy. He's going to go play. He's going to come back. He's going to have that push. Let's go. But anybody that has a little bit of I miss some practice. I miss some games. I am not 100%. This is not the Olympics. If it was the Olympics, I understand. But that's not the Olympics. I think there's a really, really tough conversation that will happen between general managers, players, agents, NHL, NHLPA, as to are these players available. Now, what if USA has two forwards that say, I'm not going, I'm injured, and the first phone call is to Tage Thompson. Mm-hmm. Hey, Tage, we'd like to have you on Team USA for the tournament. Well, that's another conversation. Kevin Adams has to have the conversation with Lindy Ruff, with Tage Thompson, with Tage's agent, with Team USA about what to do. Like, that is pretty big moving forward here.
It is, and it's going to be the talking point here for the next 5 days, essentially, in the NHL, as they, you know, try to get those rosters set. Like you mentioned, Nashville, obviously, it has been one of the worst season. And this is actually hard to say based on the fact that he was their best player despite an atrocious start to the year. But the numbers are now marrying the team start, and that is UC Saros is having statistically one of his worst seasons. And the commentary that is now starting to, the honesty, I should say, that is now starting to flow out of Music City is that, yeah, like, we know we're not going to the playoffs. We failed to live up to the hype this year, and now we're basically just going to have to try to, you know, make lives miserable for some teams that are likely to, like, it is very much,
it's out there. We're out there in the open.
We're too far gone. And again, this is basically punctuated because of five straight losses on the heels of, I believe, five straight wins. And that is just the reality for Nashville. So to tie it back in with Saros, people are already saying, like, calm down. He's already been the league leader in games played the last 3 years. Yeah. Like, stop playing him. And if he's not great and or not right, like, I get it. His consolation prize right now would be, I'm going to go to this tournament, and I'm going to try to be the MVP of this tournament because I got nothing else to salvage from this season, right? Yes. I get it. But at the same time, if I'm Nashville and if I know or have a hint that, like, UC's been just trying to do everything possible to keep us afloat and we know he's not right, why would you want him to play? Why would you want him to play in this tournament?
Hey, he always has the world championship he can go to at the end of the year and try to salvage something. So that's usually what players do after the season. You don't make the playoffs. You didn't have a great year. You go to the world championship. Woo, I feel good about myself for the summer going into next year. Like, that's really what it is. But I get the UC Saros. But again, the teams and the organizations that are putting these teams together and the GMs that are putting these teams together, they want to put the best teams together to be able to win that tournament.
The great part for Finland is that if you had to make Lankinen your number one.
Oh, he's played well.
I would feel very good based on everything he has delivered for Vancouver this year.
Better about Kevin Lankinen playing for Finland or Bennington, Montembeau, or Aiden Hill playing for Canada?
Yeah, I mean, your guy, Montembeau, I mean, obviously Montreal's gone through a tough stretch. They eked out a win last night that, speaking of goaltending, like...
Oh my gosh, it's
Georgiev. Can you give us one save? Just one, please. Like, one save is all they needed.
So bad.
The game is so cruel. We talk all the time, you know, that microscopic difference of being a star, consistent AHL performer or getting that opportunity to, you know, run with it in the NHL. And one of our local favorites, you're close with him, and Andrew Podorolski. Like, so he switched organizations again this year. He's in San Jose with the Barracuda, gets to the All-Star game again because he's over a point a game, gets the call-up last night because the Sharks are riddled with injuries. He's out there on a late power play. Power play should have been over because Celebrini should have scored like a minute earlier when he had a gift.
And then,
it's a bit of a grenade back to the blue line, and Podorolski doesn't handle it perfectly. 2-on-1 shorthanded, Montreal wins the game. And it's like,
but it shouldn't have even been there. Like, Georgiev gave up so many. He looked awful. One time he lost his tick. Yes. And I thought he lost his will to play goalie. Like, it's like, oh, I don't have my stick. I don't know what I'm supposed to do now. This is a part of me that I don't have. I'm like, dude, play the game. And then he got scored on, I think it was Newhook's one time, or he wasn't even watching the play as it went that way. It was just bad. I feel bad for San Jose, who, you know, Mackenzie Blackwood went to Colorado, had back-to-back shutout. Now, last night, he got, you know, his first goal given up in three games. And, you know, they lost. Colorado lost 3-0. But that was, you know, that was the way. And let's just give a little Eric Comrie. We talked about how he had lost eight in a row with Winnipeg, was not getting any run support. Winnipeg has been putting him back in there, and he's played well. Well, he had a shutout last night with the Winnipeg Jets, so good on Eric Comrie, and he got lucky. There was a goalie interference play where Rantanen hit him a little bit or what? Like, I didn't see a lot of contact, but there was many goalie interference calls last night that I was like, that's a goal. Like, John Tavares scored a goal by hitting the puck in the air, but his follow-through hit Dustin Wolf.
Lost you. Are you hearing me? Oh. I'm not hearing you.
Yeah, I'm hearing you now. I think I got too active, like animated. I hit my microphone again. But John Tavares hit the goalie in the head while batting the puck in the net, and he called it. No goal.
So it's kind of funny that Comrie and his former Sabre, Eric Comrie, and his season were basically mirroring that of James Reimer, who was winless in his last seven games despite playing well, and he got the victory last night. I couldn't help but chuckle at just the path that sometimes you get. You're in the tracks all year long, and there's not a darn thing you can do about it. And it's like, I hope my team scores enough tonight because I feel like I'm playing well. And so anyway, so it worked out well for Comrie last night and for Reimer. But one thing I would ask, can we just like rewind 2 weeks and just cancel the Carolina-Colorado trade?
Okay, why?
Because it's done nothing
for
either.
It made for fun. It made for
Carolina's 2-2-1. The Avs are 3-3. Neither one of them looks particularly good, and I don't like it. Like, just make the world the way it used to be. Put Natchez back on Carolina. It was a fun, developing story that he was going to rise above everything that happened last offseason and be this future star player for Carolina like they envisioned, and Mikko Rantanen shouldn't be anywhere else. He should have been an Avalanche for life. Like, this is starting to annoy me, as you can tell.
He should have been an Avalanche for life. You are 100%, but I don't think Rantanen looks bad in Carolina. I think it's just Carolina is going through a little bit of a crisis identity a little bit.
The results
like, they've
are
got
mediocre.
A superstar in Rantanen now. Like, the results are mediocre. And Marty Natchez, well, he's Natchez or whatever in Colorado now. So I think his new name doesn't fit him well. He needs to go back to Martin Natchez.
Mm-hmm. Who now is likely best positioned to unload significant assets prior to the deadline? I mean, San Jose already started their ball rolling with Granlund and CeCe, but need I remind you, they are 5-21-1 in their last 27 games. And the only reason I mention that is, oh, by the way, this is also a team that lost the first 9 games of the season.
Yeah, they were
So other than that window outside of the first 9 and this current 27, they were fine. They're clearly not fine. Like, they need to do something. So I don't know. I'm looking at them in Nashville, and I'm wondering.
Seattle is going to unload. Seattle is a team to watch. They're going to unload. And the other team to watch for me is the Utah Hockey Club. And I'm not saying they're going to unload, but I think they are going to go and make something of significance at the trade deadline this year, leading up to this summer. I think this is their first full year. They're going to be very active, and they'll be very active at the draft this summer. So I think it's the start of the dominoes for Utah. And then in the East, I think for me, the Flyers, they've already done that Farabee and Frost trade with the Calgary Flames to get Kuzmenko and Peltier. Mm-hmm. But I am looking at the Flyers. I think they will move pieces, and Danny Briere and the Philadelphia Flyers are going to be very active at the deadline.
Well, as much as we seemingly just hit on everything across the league, we didn't touch most of it. So there's still lots to get to. And, of course, the Sabres are practicing right now, and there's news that we'll await an update on based on who's not skating for them today. We continue Sabres Live. We also look ahead a month from now to the Sabres Road Crew Party. The next one is happening in Lauderdale on March the 7th. So book your flights now. Can't wait to see you there. Long list of Sabres alumni, impressive Sabres alumni, I might add. And as always, proceeds from these events go to the Sabres Foundation. Tickets are just $20. You probably got a flight for about $50 now, quite honestly. Sabres.com/roadcrew is how you get involved. And every year we have massive turnouts. And even just last night, had a gentleman rolling through the concourse at KeyBank Center say, "Saw you last year at Road Crew in Raleigh. It was amazing." So anyway, these are the, you know, it's, my goodness, Don Edwards, Danny Gare, Jerry Korap, Jim Lorenz, Pierre Turgeon, some guy who was recently inducted into the Sabres Hall of Fame, expected to be there as well. It's sabres.com/roadcrew, and this is Sabres Live. We're back after this.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We're almost at the break. Still a few more days to go in this NHL schedule before it stops for Four Nations. How closely are you paying attention? Which team is currently in first place overall, Marty?
In the National Hockey League?
I would assume so.
Okay, I am going to say the Washington Capitals.
No, be the Winnipeg Jets.
They were my first pick, and then I went the other way because I'm like, this is a trick question.
It is a trick question because the Capitals are number one based on points percentage, but the Jets are 2 points ahead in the standings. There are reasons why I wanted to get to Washington because we already dealt with Winnipeg in the first half hour, and that was their 7-game win streak highlighted by Eric Comrie getting the victory last night. Washington has Logan Thompson currently on a 12-0-2 run, a point streak that has allowed them to maintain their position. But it's not the thing I want to talk about. I just want to get this out there in our hockey community that we're sending our best and all our love to Craig Laughlin, longtime Capitals broadcaster, had open heart surgery yesterday. He's been absent from the broadcast for the last couple of weeks in the buildup to the surgery. The Capitals announced it last night amidst their home win. Huge standing ovation in-house. They get a 6-3 win over the Panthers, and Ovechkin scores again with an empty netter. But just wanted to make sure that Locker knows that that we're thinking of him.
Yeah, he's been awesome, and he's been there for a long time with the Washington Capitals, so we are thinking of him. He said he'll be back. He said, you know, this should all be good. But it is surgery, and it's heart surgery, so you always have to keep them in your prayers, so that's good. When you think about the Washington Capitals, you just mentioned Logan Thompson, 12-0-2 in his last 14 games. That is incredible. And Alex Ovechkin, this is comical, because people are going to say, wow, Ovi got to 25 goals. Wow, Ovi is 17 away from passing Wayne Gretzky. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got 878 now, and he's got to get to 895. But the way he scored his goal yesterday, the Washington Capitals already had scored an empty net to make it 5-3 against the Florida Panthers. A minute left, they still pulled Bobrovsky, and Ovi is on the ice, almost cherry-picking at the blue line for the puck to get to him. He had a chance to shoot it in. He delayed, probably wasn't sure how much time was left, and then he shot it in the goal, and it crossed the line with 0.1 second. Like, 0.1, not like, oh, the fans were on their feet waiting to see if it was going to count or not in Washington, which was really, really funny to see.
Amazing. And yet he's still not leading the NHL in empty netters this year, despite 6 of his 25 coming in that regard. Mikko Rantanen has 7 empty netters, but Ovi is the king of empty netters all time. And I'm still going to sit here and say, I don't think he gets the record this year. I really don't.
17 is a lot, because he slowed down after the injury. He started on fire.
Yeah, he scored in like 3 straight games now, right?
Yeah, but 17 goals for the rest of the year is a lot, although he will get a break at the Four Nations Faceoff, because Russia is not in the tournament, so he'll get to just rest, relax. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would love him to get it in the last game of the season or second last game of the season, like create that amazing buzz for Washington going into the playoffs. It would be fun. Oh, by the way, talking about scoring goals, Leon Draisaitl, 37 goals now on the season, and another one of those goalie pulled, like Edmonton and Colorado are probably the best two teams when it comes to pulling the goalie and getting a late goal. And then in OT, McDavid just turned Dylan Holloway the wrong way. It was kind of funny. I'm like, dude, you played with him. You know what he's capable of doing. And he turned him around and found Connor Brown for the game-winning goal.
Yeah,
that was pretty
spectacular. That's so much easier said than done. I'll let Holloway off the hook. I mean, you could literally practice against McDavid every hour of every day for your entire life and not know what to do, what to expect, how to get out of an unwinnable situation, basically.
His reaction was just one of those, like, oh, like playing against Connor McDavid in a real game is different than facing him in practice. Like when McDavid went by him and made the pass, Holloway looked up like, well, I've now been a victim of the great Connor McDavid.
Yeah, he had points on all 3 of the goals for Edmonton in their comeback win.
Yeah.
McDavid has 41 career overtime points. Who's got the most?
Overtime points. Ooh.
It's closer than you think.
I am going to say Nathan MacKinnon.
No. Come on.
No. Okay. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, this is a guy that's playing a ton of 3-on-3 and on a good team.
I know, but who's played overtime longer in this current generation?
Crosby.
Sidney Crosby.
Okay.
Has 47. He is the leader. Followed by Evgeny Malkin, 43. And McDavid has now tied Kane and Ovechkin with 41.
Oh, talking about Patrick Kane.
Yes, that's the segue.
Did you see that move last night? What a segue. That backhand slow developing,
but
you know,
not as slow as he used to be. That's the thing. I loved it.
Yes, not Kuznetsov slow, not as slow. Make the goalie think that maybe I'm going to do something else, but he slows down a little bit and does the back end. It was barred down like poor Joey Decord, victimized. And now Patrick Kane is the guy that has scored the most shootout goals in the National Hockey League with 53.
53 and tied for the most game-deciding shootout goals, with 23 of those 53 being the difference makers. He and Franz Nielsen, most notably of the New York Islanders, the co-title holders in that regard. But Kane not only delivers, and he's battled through injuries here the last couple of months, he what I really enjoyed his post-game interview last night. I thought, and again, this is a byproduct of winning, but he offered an awful lot as to, you know, the things that he's seeing, the names that just, like, without prompting from an interviewer, it's he's wanting to really spread the flowers around here.
Yep.
And yet, it's all under Todd McLellan, who now, incredibly, in 20 games with the Red Wings, has 2 7-game win streaks.
Yes.
The Red Wings are 15-4-1 under Todd McLellan to put them into wild card one in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, and the Detroit Red Wings are last in the league in penalty kill with 69.7% on the penalty kill. But in this latest 7-game win streak, the penalty kill for the Red Wings is 84.6%. You know, we talked to Shayna Goldman a lot about the Red Wings and the penalty kill, and she talked about Derek Lalonde, the former coach of the Red Wings, being an assistant coach, running the penalty kill with other teams, but could not figure out how to have a successful penalty kill with the Detroit Red Wings. Well, Todd McLellan has been able to figure that out. Like, I'm sure the head coach don't always look at every aspect of the games, but you can have an influence and tweak things. And Todd McLellan has turned the penalty kill now in the last 7 games for the Red Wings on a positive side. And now they're 7-0, like you said, second time that he's had a 7-game winning streak since taking over the Detroit Red Wings bench.
But Kane basically gave him credit for, and I know this sounds like what you would expect from every coach, but playing more aggressively. And when you start looking at the offensive contributions through their lineup, I mean, he was already having this kind of year, and it was about to be for no good reason because of where the Wings were at in the standings. But, like, Lucas Raymond is having a terrific season. But then, most recently, you get some backfill in the form of, and we're going to bounce back and forth on the way this is pronounced based on how we've pronounced his brother's name this year.
I got it pulled up on my page right now.
They're calling him Elmer Soderblom on the Red Wings broadcast, as opposed to Soderblom, which we were calling Chicago. Arvid based on what Chicago was calling him.
Yes.
So call it what you will. It's
Elmer.
A long name.
Let's call him Elmer and Arvid. Elmer and Arvid, and not call him last name.
Elmer's a big dude, and they
6'8".
Tempering their expectations, but they always felt like we might have a player here, and it's been really fun to watch him here in the last week have an impact on games. So, but again,
5 games with a point, and he's like, he keeps going. So that's what it is. Like, you're like, who's got point streaks going on in the National Hockey League? You're like, oh, top players, right? And obviously, Pasternak now has an 11-game point streak, and Boston wins and whatever, but Elmer Soderblom. Soderblom, whatever. He has 5 games, point streak. Like, that's pretty impressive for Detroit.
Yeah, and the Wings, like I said, in a wild card spot now, having won 7 games in a row. Ottawa's still in a playoff spot as well, despite their loss last night. The ongoing challenge, even with Linus Ullmark coming back, is yet another forward lost. They're playing without Josh Norris right now. Now Shane Pinto got injured too. It really is. It's almost unbearable sometimes watching the same teams deal with, like, the never-ending cycle. Like, Columbus is dealing with it. Ottawa continues to deal with it. So we'll see what they're able to do. Ullmark obviously lost last night in his return after missing more than a month. You mentioned St. Louis, and we just mentioned Todd McLellan. We've already seen what the Blues did last week with Brandon Saad being, you know, waived and ultimately have the contract terminated.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm going to ask it this way, since you just, you know, we just talked about the numbers under Todd McLellan. What do we make of the Blues? I mean, they wanted Jim Montgomery, obviously. They made the change to get the former Blue behind the bench. And we all have seen what Montgomery has done in other places. So maybe this is completely unfair. or it helps to put the spotlight where it belongs, which is not the coach. But he's been there for 32 games. They're 15, 13, and 4. So they have 15 wins and 17 losses, which is just about the exact same win-loss ratio that Drew Bannister had, with obviously the same type of roster.
Yes.
So, like, what's going to happen next with the Blues? They already made their Saad move. What else is going to happen? And what's it going to look like for them?
So I think the Blues are going to be one of the most aggressive team. I've already talked about Utah. I think Utah is going to be up there. But this is going to be the last year for GM Armstrong and the Blues at the helm. Alexander Steen is going to take over in 2026. And I feel
But that's not next. There's one more year.
Yeah, that's one more year. That's his last year. He's going to want to make moves.
Okay, you just said this year was his last. It's not. Yeah, There's one more season. Yeah.
This upcoming year, like 25-26, will be his last year.
Okay.
And I think he wants to go out on a high note. He brought in Jim Montgomery early because he didn't want him to go anywhere else. And I think now what they're going to do after this year and at the deadline is they're going to say, okay, let's sit down. Which players do we want to keep going with and which players we don't want? What's the direction of the team? And they're going to be very aggressive. They brought in Jim Montgomery. They had a coach there, Drew Bannister. He was there for a quarter of the season, right? He was like, oh, let's have him as a coach. And boom, they moved on from him. Mm-hmm. They are going to be extremely aggressive. I think there's going to be some major movement in St. Louis moving forward.
Which way, though? Like, do you mean shedding?
I think they will do a bunch of hockey trades where they will shed but acquire. They will go for big guys. The problem is that, like, Kyrou's got a no-trade clause coming up in July 1. Thomas has a no-trade clause. Shen has a no-movement clause. Buchnevich, they all have trade protection. But I'm looking at there is going to be some players in there. Maybe Buchnevich. You know, they
just signed long term with them. I can't imagine that happening.
I know. And it's $8 million. It's a lot of money. But they are going to be aggressive. And they did the two offer sheets last summer. They're going to continue to be extremely aggressive this year.
John Gibson earned his silver stick last night. 500th NHL game. And the Ducks have won 5 out of 6. And Gibson has a .636 quality starts percentage this year, which is second highest of his career.
Yep.
Congratulations, John Gibson.
Way to go, Gibby.
He's had a really, really good year.
Zegras scored.
Anaheim's won 5 of 6. It's all based on Zegras returning. And, you know, like, it's kind of fun to watch. They're not that far out of it. Like, if you're saying some teams are still in it out there, then you have to include the Ducks.
Yes, so. Absolutely. And look, Trevor Zegras, was that a Patton, Trevor Zegras type goal? No, he had one hand on the stick deflecting it, and it went over Ottinger in the third period. Great, but you need Trevor Zegras to get involved, right? And Zellweger made a great play at the blue line. That was your young guys in Anaheim have to step up, and you have Carter Gauthier getting 9 goals now. We talk about Erik Kulik here with the production. Well, Carter Gauthier is a young guy that has to produce in Anaheim. He's got almost 10 now. That's a good start for him in his NHL career.
Yeah, and Mason McTavish 7 in his last 7 as well. We'll take a quick break, come back with a little wrap on Sabres Live right after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Nothing yet as far as an update on some of the players absent from Sabres practice today, including Dylan Cousins. 3 in the NHL tonight, Bruins, Rangers, Oilers, Hawks, and Canadiens, Kings. I feel it's my duty, since I often pump the Kings tires, to tell you that the Kings are 1 point away from being out of the playoff picture in the Western Conference. Like, if Calgary and Vancouver were to win their next games and LA lose tonight, LA would be outside of the wild card. It has regressed that poorly for them over this 3-7-1 stretch. So we'll see if they bounce back tonight, getting the Canadiens on a back-to-back.
Well, it's my duty to report that the Kings did, in fact, win their last game, but they got shut out the previous two, 3-0, 3-0. They don't score a lot. They won 4-2 against Carolina, but it is going to be tight in the Western Conference if L.A. continues to tumble. And, you know, Drew Doughty's back, but it hasn't had the effect that they wanted to have as a boost for the club.
You've always maintained that the greatest stop in your NHL career was Long Island. New York has won 8 of 9, and Ilya Sorokin has won 7 in a row.
Ilya Sorokin has played now 25 of the last 29 games or something like that. Like, it's incredible. He has been fantastic. And, yes, winning 7 in a row, and he's a big reason why they won yesterday. He was really good. And they got a little bit Vegas was sleepy in the game, and, you know, they Saad was the only one scoring. Everybody else should step up, but the Islanders put him to sleep.
If the Islanders make the playoffs, Sorokin should be considered for the Hart, and Vegas is sleepy for a month now. They have 3 wins in 14. On that note, we'll see you tomorrow on Sabres Live.